The Sankhyans tell us that this whole world is combination of Prakriti and Purush, matter and spirit. And they believe that the both are independent, both are infinite, both are anadi, beginningless, and both are equally relevant. But Vedanta refutes that. It says, even though the world, as we had studied last week, is an apparent appearance combination of Prakriti and Purush, matter and spirit, which in the 13th chapter, Sri Krishna calls Kshetra and Kshetrajna, field and the knower of the field. Krishna calls it Kshetra and Kshetrajna, field and the knower of the field, which is the same as Purush and Prakriti, that is matter and spirit. But are these the ultimate? And Vedanta says no. So beyond the two, there is a third factor called Brahman, Paramatma, the substratum. And Prakriti and Purusha are expressions of that one consciousness. Prakriti, of course, is matter. And Purusha, which we call as spirit, is that consciousness, the totality, when it gets identified or conditioned by Prakriti, by matter, then it gains the title of Purusha. It is that same consciousness, when identified with an individual, it becomes the limited individual. When identified with the totality, it is called Purusha or the spirit. So what is the nature of this substratum, this Paramatman, this Brahman, the consciousness? So Krishna will today explain to us what is the nature of this consciousness and what is the nature or what happens to the individual who discovers that within himself. So today's verses are very useful, very practical, which tell us about the nature of God and what happens to the person who experiences or knows him. So we'll do verse number 28, chapter 13. Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam parameshwaram vinashyatsva vinashyantam yah pashyati sa pashyati. So samam sarveshu bhuteshu. Samam means equal. Sarveshu bhuteshu, in all beings, not only humans but animals, birds, plants, fish, in all beings, sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam, stays parameshwaram. This parameshwar, the Lord, the substratum. And what are his characteristics? We have heard some before in verses number 16, 17 and 18, Krishna had talked about it, but he's giving us one more adjective describing this, because this entity, this Paramatman consciousness cannot be described, but can only be indicated by certain characteristics. So he says, vinashyatsu avinashyantam. Vinashyatsu, in the destructible world, in this changing world, that consciousness is avinashyantam, indestructible, and yah pashyati sa pashyati. This is a very famous line, appears many times in the Gita, where Krishna says, yah pashyati, one who sees, sa pashyati, he sees. One who sees, he alone sees. So let us spend a little time. I have made a few points that are relevant. So let's start with the last line where he says, he sees who sees. Yah pashyati sa pashyati. So here, as we had talked even 2-3 weeks ago, seeing is not seeing physically, but seeing means understanding. Like when there is a difficult problem and somebody explains to you, say, oh, I see, I understand. When we talk about seeing, the eyes can only see the form. I can see the people, I can see the fan, the lights, the body, the eyes, the mind can only see the emotions. Mind can only feel emotions, joy, sorrow. But the eyes cannot see the emotions. You know, like some of you might be thinking, you know, 1 hour left for lunch. I hope the class doesn't go too long, so we am hungry. But I cannot see that, you know, that you are getting bored or you are enjoying the class. So the eyes cannot see the emotions. And then the intellect can conceptualize, can plan, can visualize, can imagine. The mind cannot. The mind has a limit. So the mind, body can see the objects, the mind can feel the emotions, the intellect can perceive the thoughts and the concepts. But this consciousness, which we have indicated as Om, cannot be seen by any of them, cannot be seen by the eyes, cannot be felt by the mind, cannot be thought even by the intellect. But the intellect is the closest equipment to that. So what we do is, when in our meditation or with the study, having studied from the masters, when our mind becomes pure, the mind becomes pure, free of negativities, and the intellect in its silence of the meditation is turned inward, then the mind and intellect, when it becomes very quiet, then the self perceives itself. The self cannot be seen by anybody else, but self perceives itself as the subject, as me, the knower. Me, the knower, who knows the body, the mind, the intellect, who knows my vasanas. I, that consciousness, can only be revealed to myself when the mind and intellect become pure and become quiet. So this is the subject, cannot become an object. So when he says, yav pasyati sa pasyati, what he means is, he understands. And only the one who understands is the one who really sees. So why Sri Krishna uses this word twice? Because what he's trying to indicate, that this is the only thing that is to be known, that is the only thing to be seen. That is the only thing that we need to, because we spend so much time of our life in all different pursuits, you know, getting this and acquiring this and, you know, collecting this and, I mean, yeah, we need that. We need that to live. But then if your whole life is spent, then you have really wasted your time. The only thing worth knowing, the only thing worth seeing, the only thing worth experiencing, the only thing worth realizing is the self. Everything else should be secondary. When that becomes the goal, then such a seeker reaches. And that's when we see Swami Ishwarananda and all these acharyas who come, Swami Bodhatmanandaji and Vimalji and all these people have made it their life, their career. You and I are still working in the world, and so that is okay. You know, you keep on doing that, but slowly, slowly turn your mind towards the higher and reduce your, you know, useless time and just necessary things you do. But when there are time, there's spare time I have, instead of just surfing the net, let me pick up a book and read, or let me, you know, listen to some good CDs or good teachings. And that person who sees is the only one worth seeing. In fact, this reminds me of a very famous bhajan. I think it's by Hari Om Sharan. He says, the eye is only useful if it goes to the temple to see the Lord. Otherwise, you have wasted your eyes. You know, if all you're just going to do is see the world. He says the hand is only useful if it is used to pray to the Lord or to serve the world. Otherwise, you're wasting, you know, all the beautiful equipment the Lord has given you. The feet can only serve their purpose if they walk to the temple or if they walk in service. The ears can only be useful if they hear good words of praise and songs. So the idea being that all my equipment should be utilized in my spiritual growth. My eyes should see the Lord. My eyes should see the Lord in everybody and love everyone. My ears should listen to good words of wisdom from these acharyas. My hand should be involved in serving the Lord, seeing the Lord everywhere and helping. So when you do that, such a person, yav pasyati sa pasyati, then only his life becomes useful. Now we'll talk a little bit about samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam parameshwaram. So the Parameshwar is equally there in all beings. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says it very beautifully. Matta मत्तः परतरम नान्यत् किंचित् अस्ति धनंजय मई सर्वमिदं प्रोक्तम सूत्रे मणि गणामिव. सो व्हाट ही सेज इज दैट आई एग्जिस्ट एवरीवेयर. इन फैक्ट द वर्ल्ड इज इन मी, इट्स नॉट बियॉन्ड मी. Krishna, not only, not that as individual with the form, but Krishna, that totality, he says, I extend even beyond the world. Mattav parataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. Nothing extends beyond me. I extend beyond the whole universe. So the whole universe exists in me. But then he says, I'm not only outside, but mai sarvam idam proktam sutre mani ganamiva. Just as a necklace is supported by a thread. The thread goes through the pearls and holds the necklace. So I am that thread that holds this whole universe. This whole universe is held by me just as the thread is not seen. We don't see the thread, but we know that there is a thread which is holding. Otherwise, the pearls would fall apart if the necklace, if the thread was removed. So similarly, I am that thread that is not only outside the universe, but inside, supporting the whole universe. That's why when you see the stars, you know, and the planets, how the planets go around the sun, who holds them in the place? You say gravity, but you know, who made the power of gravity? And the moon rotates around the earth. Moon doesn't fall down on us. I mean, everything is so beautifully held together. All the plants, the animals, the birds, even forget about the world, even within me, we have 4 billion cells in us. And each one is so perfectly working together. The digestive system and nervous system and the circulate all work in perfect harmony. As the blood is required, say, if a person is doing exercise, then, you know, all the blood goes to the muscles. The other organs say, okay, you can have the blood. We don't need it. Very unselfishly they work. Or after, you know, after food, then the blood goes to the digestive system. Thank God this class is not after lunch, because if it were, then the blood would be in the digestive system and half of you would be snoring. That's why we have it before lunch. So we see that he, as the support, as the substratum, is within and without the whole universe. Everything is he and he alone. And he supports everything, he exists in everything. And we find that there is a great variety of individuals. No two noses are the same, no two ears are the same, no two fingerprints are the same, no snowflakes, they say, are the same. I still have my doubts, but they say that there's never been another snowflake. If that is, that's amazing. But the one, you know, everybody's joys and sorrows are different. Your joys are different from my joys. Your sorrows are different from my sorrows. Like this time, your sorrow is to listen and my sorrow is to speak. So our joys and sorrows are different. Our bodies are different. Our mind and intellect is different. But there is one support that is supporting everything, that is enlivening everything, that is one abiding in everyone. So he says, Tishthantam Parameshwaram. Then he says, Vinashyatsu Avinashyantam. This is very beautiful. It says, it is the changeless among the changing. Because in this world, we find things are constantly changing. A child is born, then he grows, then he gets middle-aged, then he gets sick, then he gets old, and then he dies. But who knows? That, like, I remember my childhood. I remember when I was 4 or 5, you know, going to school. And then I remember as a teenager. And then all my foolishness and all that I remember. And I still remember today what I did 20 years ago. Not all the details, but the highlights of that. So my body is known to me. My mind, my emotions are known. My intellect is known. This ego, the perceiver, feeler, thinker, is also changing. The body is changing, the mind is changing, the intellect is changing, the desires are changing. The world of objects, emotions, and thoughts are all changing. There is one changeless factor that was there, is there, and will be there in Dakshinamurti. Stotram, it says it very beautifully, Balya Dishwapi Jagrata Dishu Tatha सर्वासु अवस्थासु अपि व्यावृत्तासु अनुवर्तमान अहमिति अंतस्फुरंतम तदा. सो ही सेज दैट कॉन्शियसनेस वॉज देयर इन चाइल्डहुड, यूथ एंड ओल्ड एज, इन वेकिंग ड्रीम एंड डीप स्लीप, इन ऑल स्टेजेस एज आई. दैट आई इज द चेंजलेस फैक्टर. Somebody will say, this is all bunk. You know, God, there's no such thing as God. You know, he has just been created by these pandits just so we go and bow down to them and go to the temple or church and put some money. See, they made it a business. There is no such thing as changeless. Change is the changeless law of nature. They'll tell you that. Change is the changeless law. So the only thing changeless is that everything changes. So the world changes, Prakriti changes, there is nothing changeless. It is all bunk. You know, some people come up with that, these kind of arguments, and they seem very convincing. So I was listening to Swami Chinmayananda's tape, and he very beautifully explains. He says that, how do I know the world of change? By sitting on a changeless. If I am changeless, then I can know the world of change. It only the changeless can know the world of change. Just as I said, I know my childhood, my youth, my middle age and old age. So similarly, I, the changeless, can only know. So the example they give is like, you're on a ship in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and for miles around there is only ocean, 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 nothing else. And how do you know the ship is moving? When you're standing there, you can't even tell whether the ship is moving or stationary. It appears so still. But then when you come close to the shore, and then you see that on the shore there is a changeless tree that is not moving. Changeless means that's not moving, tree and land and mountain. And then as the ship is moving, you can see, okay, in reference to the mountain, in reference to the tree, in reference to the ground, this ship is moving. So you need a changeless point to stand on to see the changing world. Like people say, the earth is moving, you know. Now you and I don't experience it. You know, do we experience the earth is moving? Some of you might say, I do. After I've had a couple of pegs of scotch, then the earth moves, even the ceiling moves. But generally, we don't see the earth moving, and people, you know, all the scientists tell us earth is moving. I say earth is not moving. I see the sun rising in the east and going down to the west, and then I see the moon. I am stationary. So how do I know that the earth is moving? So they say go sit up in the space station, you know, in the International Space Station. When you sit there, there you are relatively stationary. And once you are there, then you can see, okay, now I can see the earth moving around the sun. I can see the moon moving around the earth. So they say that the changeless factor is required to be stationary to see the whole world of change. So that's why he says this factor called Brahman or consciousness is changeless, is unmoving, is unaffected by time and space. You know, we may be born and dying, we may be decaying, but that never decays, always. That's why God is described as always youthful. Some places they describe, because it's always young, it's always vibrant, he's full of energy, he's not a passive changeless, it's not like a log just lying there, you know, it's silent, but it is a active, vibrant energy that is supporting and enlivening all of us. It's the description, the more you think about it, so beautiful, you know, the Lord's nature and characteristics. And even a person who denies God, who says, there is no God, I don't believe in God, Swami Chinmayananda says, even to deny God, you need God. You need energy provided by Him to deny. The fact that you are alive shows that you are supported by that energy, you are enlivened by that energy. You, if you were dead, if there was no God, then you couldn't. In fact, God has given us the freedom even to criticize Him or curse Him Or, you know, people do that. They will stand and they will say, I hate God, or I despise God, or he has done this bad and he has done that bad. But even to criticize him, you need the energy provided by him. So that's why they say that no matter what you do, good or bad, happy or unhappy, it is that energy, that substratum, which is supporting all of us. So what is the practical application of this? How would I practically apply that in my life? But a few years ago, there was a world conference on hunger in Europe somewhere. And all the, you know, countries of the world showed up, and some of the countries were going through famine and all. So they said, we need to have a world conference how to address hunger. And so, of course, the first few speakers were the countries who are not hungry. The US and Canada and Russia and Britain and Germany and France and also. And Bangladesh, you know, where the real famine was given the last slot. Anyway, the Bangladesh speaker started speaking, but what happened is the conference ran over. So by the time his turn to came, there was a cocktail party outside, you know, hosted by Monsanto or one of these food companies, you know, that market all these genetic products. So all the delegates were all there, and that poor Bangladesh speaker was talking about famine and hunger in his country, and very few sprinkling of delegates were there. And he was trying to tell them how the, you know, major problems of the underdeveloped country. People had no time. They were there just to have a good time, so they were drinking. But what this writer says is that if you look at alcohol, it is predominantly grain. It is grain and grapes and all this food that is used to. And so when you are drinking alcohol, they say that the amount of alcohol consumed in the world every year could feed anywhere between 80 to 100 million people. So up to 100 million people could be fed with that amount of grain that is used, you know, all the barley and all the food and everything that is used to, you know, to make alcohol. So he said, the author says, next time you have a drink, you should think about a hungry child, you know, who is being deprived of food because of that. Then he goes on to say, this is okay, but even worse is the amount of money and energy spent on making arms. If you look at the US's defense budget, it is $400 to $500 billion a year, which is more than $1 billion a day. And that is only the US. If you count all the countries of the world, it is somewhere between $4 to $5 billion, which works out to $5 million every minute. So as I have spoken, somebody has spent $5 million on making arms, and it goes on and on, minute after minute, second after second, month after month, and billions of dollars are spent throughout the world in making arms to destroy each other, to kill each other. And all the countries have plenty of weapons, but they still keep on making new nuclear weapons and more sophisticated armaments to destroy, you know, thousands of people. And not only the money, but think about the brains, all the best talents, the best engineers and the best financial people and the best scientists and the best thinkers are all being utilized to discover more and better ways to destroy mankind. If all this money and all this time, even half, even forget about all, even part of this money was utilized to create more food or to help, you know, build better homes or, you know, clothes. So the point is that when you see this world, and then we see the wastage, you know, in the food, in the wastage and all the disposables and products and all, we are slowly not only destroying the earth, but by wasting, we are actually depriving, you know, other people of food. So that's what they say, that when you're eating, or when you always have a little thought towards the people who don't have enough. And so each one of us should make some commitment in our life that I have to do something personally to help alleviate hunger or help somebody do some community service. Because society gives us so much. The Lord has given us everything, the air, the water, the sun, the life, the ability to think, everything. So it is my duty to give back to society. Otherwise, Krishna in the fourth chapter, he says, such a person is a thief who takes from me and then does not give back. So I have to make some effort to try to alleviate hunger. Maybe if I know a child who needs education, you know, personally I know somebody, okay, help that child. Or I know a family that is hardworking and in need, let me make that my project or my goal. Or if I don't have an individual, then maybe pick organizations that are doing good work. And it's very important to ask how much of the money goes into administration. I used to send money to one organization. He would call and sounded genuine. It was not much, a couple of hundred. I would give an ad in there. And then this week, I just asked them. I said, how much of it do you spend? He said, 50% of it goes in administration. And probably he was understating. Most organizations is 65 to 70. So pick organizations like that are doing good work, like the CORD, you know, that we have seen personally in the Chinmaya Mission. More than 95% of the money goes, you know, hardly 1 or 2% goes in administration. So either if you know somebody yourself, then you should give it, or you should pick deserving organizations where genuine work is being done, where the money is not going into somebody's pocket. So that is the practical application, that when I see the one Lord everywhere, then I have to serve him, because it is that, and not only that, but whatever I have earned, whatever I have accumulated, there are so many people who have contributed to my success, my parents, my teachers, my employees, my co-workers. So I owe so much to society, it is my duty to give back. So I was just thinking that this would be a practical application of seeing the Lord in everyone. How do I bring a change in my life? It's a beautiful verse. We can talk a lot more, but I would like everybody to maybe participate and contribute. Absolutely. Right. And another thing, people say, oh, I should only help in my city or my community or my state in India or my country. What they say is that there is one totality. It doesn't matter where you help. You might help in Bakersfield. You might help in Africa. You might help in Vietnam. You might help in South America. Everywhere you help, it is one connected totality. So it doesn't matter. We don't have to limit itself to only my city, my community, my state. Wherever I find a deserving situation, just give and do it generously. And people say, oh, it's my hard-earned money, why should I give it? But no matter how much you give, he has a lot more. He has so much that whatever you give is replaced. Not only you get the spiritual benefit, but even materially. Look at Bill Gates. He gives $1 billion a year, not a million or a thousand million every year. And his net worth has never gone down. Every year it's 5 billion, 6 billion. It keeps growing. He knows that. He's smart. He says that the more I give, the more he gives me. Microsoft keeps growing. The stock keeps growing. So there is no way that by giving in a good cause, you will come out a loser. It's a win-win-win-win everywhere. So I think that is a good point. Thank you. Yes. All beings means all animals, birds, plants, fish, all beings, all creatures, humans. He's equally there in the saints and in the sinner. He's equally there in the plant and he's equally there in the bird. He's equally there in the fish. The manifestation depends on your equipment. A plant has a limited equipment, so it can only grow. You know, a bird can fly, a fish can swim, an animal can walk, a human can think. So depending on your equipment, your activities will be different. But the Lord is equally there in all beings. All beings means all living creatures. Is that your question? No, he supports them equally. He supports the criminal as much as he supports the saint. He does not withdraw from anybody. He continues to do his job. Depending on your equipment, you do good and bad actions, and then he has a law of karma that he has made. So you suffer the good and bad consequences of those actions. No, the Lord does not withdraw. He continues to support everybody, whether he's good or bad. Right.
Exited the human being, he wouldn't be there anymore.
Right. The human being would be dead. Right. Absolutely.
Since the human has more equipment than the rock, right. He has the vastness, where I don't think the rock does.
Absolutely. It's like the sunlight. The sunlight doesn't say, I'm only going to shine on the good people and not on the evil. The sun gives sunlight to everybody equally. It's depending on how you use the energy from the sun for good or bad. No, he does not withdraw from the evil. Yes. No, he doesn't. He won't stop loving you no matter how evil we become. He never stops loving us. He's always there. He's like, example they give is that he's waiting at the door, you know, for us to open the door and let him in. But we say, I have no time, God. When I, maybe after 65, I'll, you know, when I have time after I retire, then I, you know, he, poor guy is waiting outside the door for us to open the door to let him in with love, you know, but we don't have time. That is our problem. And he asks for nothing. He gives us this whole universe. You know, all he asks for is just love. You know, just love me and remember me. That's all he wants. He doesn't want anything from us. And we don't even have time for that.